It's Friday, April 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, President Obama and Gulf leaders band together against Islamic State. Myanmar's new government looks to release scores of political prisoners.
It's not a cure, but it's a glimmer of hope and encouragement.
Pill may have big health benefits. Also ahead, a new look to the U.S. $20 bill. And music fans are crying purple tears. It's all on today's International Edition. President Barack Obama has concluded his visit to Saudi Arabia, saying the United States and Gulf state leaders remain united in efforts to destroy the Islamic State group and stabilize the conflict-ridden Middle East region. Speaking at the close of Thursday's summit with the six-nation GCC, the president reaffirmed the U.S. commitment to deter and confront aggressions against its partners and allies in the region. VOA White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas is traveling with the president and just a short time ago from Riyadh told International Edition host Susan Yaki what the U.S. hopes the summit will accomplish.
They are looking for ways that they can agree on more and work together on more things in the Middle East. That's very broad, but generally it's, you know, there's some disagreement about how to approach all the chaos and all the political uncertainty and the way things are happening in the Middle East right now. They have different priorities, different ways of approaching how they should handle it. And so right now they're actually just discussing ways that they can work more closely. And that is a great hope here that this dialogue continues. There will probably be some announcements afterwards on how they've deepened cooperation. Also some military assistance from the U.S., which is really important to the Gulf states. But beyond that, not a whole lot more other than to continue the dialogue.
One concern is the fight against the Islamic State.
That is a key priority for the United States. That is the three sessions. One is regional security, how they can work together more closely. The second session is really important, especially for the United States, and that is combating Islamic State and al-Qaeda. The U.S. would like more cooperation and help from Arab states on that. The U.S. sees that as a top priority, not just for the U.S., but for global security. So a lot of the Arab states are more concerned about Iran and its actions in the region and sectarian wars, sectarian conflicts. And that's what they're worried about. To many of the Gulf states, that's the global priority. That's the key priority, the key security threat. So the second session will focus on what U.S. views as the greater threat, and that is al-Qaeda and Islamic State. Now, the final session on this day will be on Iran, and that addresses, of course, the concerns of many of the Arab states.
And those concerns are?
Well, they're concerned that Iran continues to build up its military capabilities, continues missiles testing, continues to back many of the rebels in the region that are causing chaos and political failures, like in Yemen. That is a key example. Tehran backing the Houthis. So Saudi Arabia went in there with some costly military power to combat the Houthis. Stems back to the regional rivalry between the Sunni majority Saudis and the Shia majority Iranians, the proxy war. So that's the big concern here. And these are all neighbors. So they view that as the greater threat and the more immediate threat to them. So all the very complex issues, a lot to tackle in one day. But I think the U.S. position is that this is a good time to address this because there are some fragile ceasefires right now in Yemen and also in Syria. The U.S. would like to see more of the focus on those, turn to the political process to continue to stabilize those states, and then more focus go to Islamic State and al-Qaeda.
VOA White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas. Mr. Obama is now heading to his fifth visit of the UK during his term, which will include lunch later Friday with Queen Elizabeth. She, of course, is celebrating her 90th birthday. We turn now to our social media segment, and International Edition's G. Abby Lee joins me here in the studio with What's Buzzing Online. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
I kind of know what's buzzing out there. Yes. Many people expressing their condolences for Prince through social media.
Absolutely. And you know you're an American icon when the President of the United States write about your death on Facebook. Mm. President Obama wrote more than 100 words on his death that began like this. Today, the world lost a creative icon. Michelle and I join millions of fans around the world in mourning the sudden death of Prince. He ended the statement with, "Our thoughts and prayers are with his family, his band, and all who loved him."
And what's the public reaction like to this post?
Many people are commenting with lyrics to his song, "Let's Go Crazy," not only to that particular post, but to numerous media outlets' posts about Prince. We can safely guess that this is a crowd favorite. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life.
Well, Prince has a Twitter account, doesn't he?
He does. He has more than 223,000 followers, and he's following none. Of all the recent tweets he sent out, this one from April 15th grabbed my attention. He wrote, "I am #transformed. More than 22,000 people liked that tweet.
Well, what else is trending on the web?
The Time magazine released this year's list of the 100 most influential people in the world, and that list includes American rapper Nicki Minaj and International Monetary Fund Managing Director Christine Lagarde, and another woman, former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, is also on the list. One of her supporters is quoted as saying, "That's the Hillary Clinton I know. The friend who takes the call, the public servant who listens and acts, the mom who makes sure it gets done right." But some of the comments to that post was not favorable to Clinton. One of the most liked replies reads like this. "Yes, that Hillary, the one who won't release transcripts of her speeches and gets her pockets lined with Wall Street." You can search for tweets related to the list by using the #Time100. Back to you, Jim.
Well, thank you so much to the artist currently known as G. Abby Lee. She tweets for our program's account at @VOA_IE and from her own account at G. Abby Lee. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hi there, this is Larry London, the host of Border Crossings. Nice to meet you. I would love for you to join us each and every day, Monday through Friday, on Border Crossings for requests, dedications, giveaways, and surprise guests. We've got some of today's biggest hitmakers coming into the studio to talk about their music. And all we're missing is you. So join us Monday to Friday right here on Border Crossings. This is the Voice of America.
International Edition. The spokesperson for the office of Myanmar President Thin Chaw has told VOA officials they are reviewing the court cases against dozens of political prisoners in a bid to drop all charges. Chaw Tay said the cases being reviewed involve peaceful activities based on freedom of expression, not criminal or violent activities. State counselor and Nobel laureate Aung San Suu Kyi has vowed to push for the release of political prisoners and student activists held under previous military-backed governments. As many as 200 detainees may be involved, and about 200 have already been pardoned. Vikram Nehru, a Bakri chair in Southeast Asia Studies at the Washington-based Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, tells VOA's Victor Beatty via Skype, it's impressive to see how quickly the National League for Democracy-dominated government is moving on the issue.
You know, it started on April the 9th when they, in fact, released 113, and then the president very recently announced the release of another 83, though apparently only 63 have been released so far. And now there's this additional effort to try and release the remaining political prisoners who have been put in prison for peaceful protests against the previous administration, for protesting against land grabs and that sort of thing. So it's very encouraging to see how fast the NLD administration is moving on this.
Vikram, who are these people?
People like journalists, peasants, workers, union activists, people who were carrying out peaceful protests against the administration, against what they saw as being local injustices. So, for example, peasants who came together to protest against land grabs, or union activists who protested against the conditions in garment factories, or journalists, for example, who may have been critical about the way religion was being used to incite violence. So these were, frankly, actions taken by people that would in other countries have gone almost unnoticed, or at least would have been considered perfectly appropriate and legal. But in Myanmar, unfortunately, they were imprisoned, and I think now those wrongs are being righted, and that's a good thing.
Will this end the issue of political prisoners in Myanmar?
They may be. It's difficult to tell, but some people have raised concerns that there are some ethnic political prisoners who really should be released. That's difficult to tell without actually reviewing the individual cases. What's very interesting is that the Myanmar Human Rights Commission is reviewing each and every case and making sure that those who are being released are those who have not really committed any criminal acts or acts of violence. That's the first point. And secondly, what's also quite encouraging is that it's the Myanmar police who will eventually drop the charges against these prisoners, which means that the Minister for Home Affairs, under whom the police operate, and who is, in fact, an army-appointed person and is from the army, Chaw Swe, is cooperating with the NLD administration. So that is a very encouraging sign as well.
Vikram Nehru welcomes the announcement by Aung San Suu Kyi that she will press for greater autonomy for Myanmar's ethnic minorities, groups that have been fighting previous governments in Myanmar, also known as Burma, for years. There's a new study out, and it says that it adds to a growing body of evidence that suggests small doses of aspirin are good for your health. It does not work with apples, but it turns out that an aspirin a day can actually keep the doctor away. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
It's been known for a while that a small daily dose of aspirin can lessen the risk of heart disease and even colon cancer. New findings suggest the painkiller may also increase survival in people with cancers of the colon, breast, and prostate by up to 20% if those patients are getting chemotherapy. Peter Elwood is a medical epidemiologist at Cardiff University School of Medicine in Great Britain. 40 years ago, he was involved in the first study exploring the beneficial effects of aspirin in the prevention of heart disease. Elwood's team reviewed 47 studies looking for evidence that aspirin benefited cancer patients. They found some.
And there's fairly consistent evidence of a 15 to 20% reduction in death and a reduction in metastatic spread by low-dose aspirin.
By low dose, he means 81 milligrams, the amount contained in a typical baby aspirin. The study, which was observational, followed cancer patients for 5 years. Elwood says the evidence is strongest that aspirin delays mortality among colorectal cancer patients, but there was also benefit seen among people being treated for breast and prostate cancer. Elwood called his study's findings, published in the journal PLOS ONE, exciting.
I feel very gratified because to people given the diagnosis of cancer, it's not a cure, but it's a glimmer of hope and encouragement to them. So I'm thrilled to have this evidence from the study.
He recommends taking a little aspirin a day as a hedge against disease, but he's cautious.
If they ask me personally, what would I do if I had a diagnosis of cancer, I would say I would have no hesitation in taking it. But I do not recommend it to people. I want them to have the evidence and take their own decision.
Since the studies were observational, not controlled, a lot more research needs to be done. The team says there are clinical studies going on right now to establish a link between daily aspirin and its cancer-fighting potential. Aspirin can cause gastrointestinal bleeding, and Elwood urges patients to talk with their doctors before starting any daily aspirin regimen. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
U.S. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew has called it an exciting moment to announce that 19th century abolitionist Harriet Tubman will appear on the front of the $20 bill, the first African-American to be so honored. Lew said it is the first in a series of steps to redesign American currency.
Harriet Tubman is one of the great American stories. A woman born a slave, illiterate for her whole life. She brought many, many people out of slavery through the Underground Railroad by time and again risking her own life to save others. She did intelligence for our army during the Civil War. She worked to get the women's suffrage movement going. It's a great American story about how if you care about our democracy, it doesn't matter where you come from and it doesn't matter what you started out with, you can change our country. We're also going to be changing the 5 and the 10. And on the back of the 10, we're going to tell the story of women's suffrage more generally, with the leaders of the suffrage movement and a demonstration on the steps of the Treasury building for the women's right to vote. And on the back of the 5, we're going to bring to life the Lincoln Memorial with iconic events that have really changed our country.
Lew said the target date for the redesigns, which will employ the most modern anti-counterfeit technology, is in the year 2020. That's the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage in the United States, and circulation will begin after that. We've lost an American pop icon. Prince has died at the age of 57. The shocking news was confirmed a short time ago by the artist's publicist after reports that police were investigating a death at his home in Minnesota. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald is a big Prince fan, like many of us, and stops by to talk about his amazing life and career.
This was a real shocker, Jim. Prince died at his home in Chanhassen, Minnesota, on Thursday, April 21st. He was 57. His publicist broke the news. And as of right now, Thursday afternoon, when you and I are talking, the Carver County Sheriff's Office is investigating the circumstances of his death. At this time, there's no evidence of foul play. Prince had been hospitalized in Illinois last week for what his representative said at the time was the flu. He was released 3 hours later. He returned to his home in Minnesota. He'd had to cancel two dates on his current North American tour. He was born Prince Rogers Nelson in Minneapolis on June 7th, 1958. Over the course of his long career, he sold more than 100 million records. He won 7 Grammy Awards. He also won a 1985 Academy Award for Best Original Song Score for Purple Rain. This may be his best-known work to date. It was a semi-autobiographical movie. The soundtrack album sold over 22 million copies, and it really put him on the map as a musical superstar. Prince entered the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2004, and he also performed at the Super Bowl in 2007, giving what I think is one of the all-time great Super Bowl performances.
And we're fortunate, you mentioned Purple Rain, that we have so much video to go with this. We can see a Super Bowl halftime show online still.
And you know, there is a lot of great material out there that has not been widely distributed off the internet. On my Twitter feed, I have footage of him jamming to While My Guitar Gently Weeps at the 2004 Rock Hall of Fame ceremony when he was inducted. And I also have some 2008 footage of him performing Radiohead's Creep. And it just drives home the fact that he was an incredible performer and a fantastic guitarist. Prince was very prolific. He released more than 36 albums over the course of his career. It all started in 1978 with his debut album, For You. Prince was in his teens when he started working on this album. He produced, arranged, composed, and played all of the instruments on that album. He was a phenomenal musician, an incredible guitarist. And beyond that, he also stretched the boundaries of popular music. He played rock, funk, soul, R&B, and many other forms, even a little bit of world music. And he bundled it all together in a very challenging, provocative manner. A lot of his songs were banned or not played on the radio. His lyrical content could get very sexual, very provocative. His image was very androgynous. He was an interesting guy. He guarded his privacy very jealously. He was famously leery of social media and the internet. There really was no one quite like Prince.
Check it out at Ray on the Hits. And each week, check out Ray McDonald on his VOA Top 20 Countdown. Ray, when can they hear that?
They can hear it every Thursday.
Thanks for stopping by, Ray.
Thank you, Jim.
You've been listening to International Edition. We're always available at voanews.com and on Twitter at @VOA_IE. For director Tracy Carter and engineer Carl Starling, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For 46 years now, the United States and many other countries have observed April 22nd as Earth Day. Back in 1970, Earth Day was the culmination of a movement born out of growing public outrage at the lack of political response to rampant pollution and gross environmental degradation perpetrated around the country. That first Earth Day attracted over 20 million participants, and since then, the movement has continued to grow and expand to encompass all environmental issues, including most recently climate change. This year's theme is Trees for the Earth. Forests are the Earth's lungs, and as such are critically important to our well-being. They capture and store the greenhouse gas carbon dioxide and produce oxygen. They regulate global and regional climate systems and release moisture into the atmosphere, which then returns to the earth in the form of rain. For local populations, they are a vital source for food, fuel, medicines, and income-generating forest products, such as rubber and nuts. So if a forest is cut down, the negative effect is far-reaching in its degradation of our common habitat. When trees are logged, the trees themselves and the denuded landscapes release their stored carbon dioxide. In fact, deforestation and land use changes produce nearly one quarter of global greenhouse gas emissions. Nonetheless, every year we lose over 15 billion trees due to deforestation, land development, and poor forest management. This degrades our environment and exacerbates both the causes and effects of climate change. The idea behind this year's slogan, Trees for the Earth, is to inspire people to plant trees, 7.8 billion of them, by the year 2020. Nearly 8 billion new trees will help us fight climate change and pollution, slow down environmental degradation, and protect biodiversity. On this Earth Day, let us remember that reductions in deforestation and mass planting of new trees can help curb many of the environmental problems our planet faces today.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.